Today I'm speaking with Commandant Jane Lawler, Gender Advisor of the Irish Defence Forces. Jane joined the Defence Forces in 1997 and has served in several UN peacekeeping missions, including in Lebanon, Liberia, Kosovo, and Afghanistan.
Jane, you serve as the Gender, Equality, and Diversity Officer of the Irish Defence Forces. What does that job entail?
Basically, the Irish Defence Forces had a major reorganisation approximately 12 months ago, and out of that, one of the new appointments that was created was a gender officer. Previously, we had a equality officer in place, but they decided that due to the importance of 1325, that they would actually amalgamate and make a specific job for gender within the organisation. Since I've taken up the job, what I've tried to do is to come up basically with a plan and a way of implementing Security Council Resolution 1325 into the Defence Forces at all levels, so be it into our policy, into our operations, and into our training.
How far has that plan progressed? What measures has Ireland taken to increase the number of women in peacekeeping and to integrate that gender perspective across the Defence Forces more broadly?
Okay, I think if I separate that and deal with it in two aspects. Deal with it firstly of what we've done to integrate 1325 and integrate a gender perspective. The first thing we did was gender advisor training course in SWEDINT. And while I was there, I had the opportunity to meet people from other nations and other gender advisors and to listen to their experiences and see exactly what their country was doing. And whilst I was on the course, I was sitting, writing notes, thinking of all the things that I had to do when I got back to Ireland and all the initiatives that I could take. And my Finnish colleague spoke at one stage about the Finnish Defence Forces Action Plan. And I thought this was an absolutely excellent idea. It was exactly what I wanted and what I was looking for. So what I did then when I came back to Ireland was I approached the General Staff through my own directorate and I looked for permission to do exactly that, which was to write a Defence Forces Action Plan. So what that entailed was basically drawing out of the taskings that we received, the Defence Forces received in the National Action Plan, and putting them down into concrete, identifiable objectives for the Defence Forces to reach, including indicators, objectives, timelines. So basically, I was leaving no room to manoeuvre. Units were being given a task and a timeline, and then if they weren't completing those tasks, they would have to answer back to me why they weren't doing it. And so that was the first step. After that, then, I'm only one person and I'm situated in our headquarters. So the amount of influence that I would have within the brigades and within the units is quite limited. So what I did was I requested permission to form an implementation group. And again, the general staff are very, very pro this. And they gave me their full backing and we were allowed to form an implementation group. And what this does, it draws the SMEs, the subject matter experts from the HR branch, our operations branch, our training branch, and also from the United Nations School in Ireland, because they're the key personnel who have the key tasks in the action plan. And then between us, the implementation group, what we're doing is we meet regularly to ensure that the plan is being implemented as it's supposed to be, in the correct fashion, and that the message is getting down to the brigades and to the units and that it's permeating through our organization. The second half of the question then, you asked me, what are we doing to increase recruitment and increase the numbers? And that's something that is very dear to my heart because I feel it's a great challenge that we face. And I know from speaking to other nations, they're facing the same challenge. Currently, the Defence Forces, we stand at approximately 6.2%. It's the highest we've been. We haven't gotten any higher than that. But we are stagnating at that figure. So at the moment, we have a few different initiatives going on. One thing we're looking at is how can we look at our retention of personnel? So instead of women reaching a certain point in their career and deciding that the home-life-work balance was too much of a conflict, that we would try and examine this and come up with family-friendly policies that we could put in place in order to try and make the Defence Force is more attractive for people to stay in, particularly women to stay in, and to give them an opportunity to stay in if they so wished. So in this area, the kind of policies we're currently examining are having creches on site, which we haven't had previously. Mm. We're also looking at the possibility of job sharing certain appointments in overseas deployments. So currently, the majority of our deployments tend to be 6 months. We're looking at other appointments that we can split so that you do a 3-month deployment. This wouldn't be just for women, it would be for primary carers, and it would be probably only available at a certain period in your life, and you could maybe only avail it at a certain number of times. But what it would do is it would allow a primary carer, be they male or female, to ensure that they have the same opportunities to serve overseas and therefore be available and be ready and be qualified for promotion to higher ranks. Other areas that we're looking at are the modularization of our career courses. Currently, they're not conducted in modules, so a lot of primary carers find it difficult to leave home for an extended period, the longest being our command and staff course, which is a 9-month residential course. These are all in the pipeline. The general staff have set up a working group on which I'm sitting in order to carefully examine all of these initiatives, and hopefully we will see some of these come to fruition in the coming year. The other side of it then is increasing our recruitment. And on this area, I think this is where we need the most drive, and we need to really think outside the box. And I think what we really need to do is to actually target females. We've done a small bit in this area. The Irish Defence Forces in 2012 used a targeted social media campaign, mainly through Facebook, to try and attract and target suitable females. And how that worked was that if the profile of the person, say on Facebook, indicated that they were a member of a sports club or involved in certain activities which would be generally suited towards military life, that they were then targeted with a pop-up ad advertising a career in the forces. We have a huge array of talented females currently serving at the top of their career in the military field, but also in sporting fields. And we have international athletes across a range of sports. I think we need to utilize them as a recruiting tool in order to try and act as role models to show younger girls that it is a career that can be so beneficial, can be very, very rewarding, but also that can be done in conjunction with having a family.
Could we step back to the gender action plan? And similarly, could you give some examples of the tasks and measures being called for implementing at all levels?
If we started our training branch, what we've said is that they currently have to examine all the career course syllabi that exist within the Defence Forces, be it for Army, Navy and Air Corps. They have to examine them, look at the current gender that's training, if there is any, that's in those courses, and then come up with what should be in it. Now, I've given them the lectures, I've told them what each course should have. And what we've done is we've, on induction, whether you are inducted into the Defence Forces as a cadet or as a recruit, you receive a block of training on gender perspective, gender awareness. And then as you progress up through your career, every time you hit a career course, so whether it be a young officer's course, whether it be a potential NCO course, whether you're going for promotion to colonel or you're going for promotion to sergeant or sergeant major, that at various stages you will then receive further gender training that will be aligned with the responsibility of the higher rank that you're hoping to attain. So what we're trying to do is keep it progressive in nature, but also to ensure that as people move through their careers, it's something that's been regularly brought to their attention and that it's been utilized on career courses. So say if you're on your course and you're planning an operation, that it's at the forefront of your mind that you need to consider gender in your operations in order to ensure that we are integrating a gender perspective into those plans. So that's one example. Again, from a training perspective, we've looked at all our overseas pre-deployment training. And actually what we found is that we're actually doing a lot of this. We're doing a lot of the gender training, but we weren't calling it gender training or we weren't calling it 1325 training. What we were looking at was we were looking at human rights training, and then we dealt with human rights of women. So what we've done is we've formalized a lot of what we have in place, and we've come up with a set standard pre-deployment training module, gendered, that every person deploying overseas, regardless of their rank, will receive. And what it does is it covers basic what is gender, gender perspective, gender awareness. Then we talk about gender analysis, so why we need to be aware of women and why we need to get data, sex disaggregated data. Then we move on to looking at gender-based violence, looking at the UN blue card, the code of conduct for soldiers. We call it our soldiers card. And what we've done is then we've taken the UN blue card, we've made an Irish version of it, so it's basically the same thing as the code of conduct, but we've actually strengthened. We've made it even stronger than the UN recommend to ensure a zero tolerance policy. And we've tried to empower the soldiers. We've come up with reporting mechanisms. So when they travel overseas, that they know exactly if they feel that there's something askew or they encounter gender-based violence, or we've told them what they need to look out for sexual exploitation, for human trafficking, this kind of thing, that they know there's someone there that they can talk to and report it to, and hopefully remedial action is taken. Also, what we've done is that the Irish Defence Forces now, when they deploy a large mission overseas, so generally infantry company plus up to battalion, that the chief of staff of that unit will be a gender advisor. Basically, they're the second in command of the unit, and they are now holding that appointment. We try to send them over to Sweden to do the gender field advisor course. So they are then operating at the highest level within our leadership overseas, and they have that gender perspective. And also what we've done is we ensure that we hold gender focal point training, and we make sure that there is a person from each of the tactical units who is qualified as a gender focal point, because at the end of the day, they're the people conducting the operations. So we're hoping that by having a gender focal point embedded at the lowest tactical level, but having a gender advisor or gender field advisor at the highest chief of staff level, that we can get the message to come from the top down, but also from the bottom up as well.
Both the gender focal points as well as the gender advisors, would you say that there's men as well as women taking on those roles in Irish peacekeeping?
Absolutely. We only stand, as I said, 6.2% are women. So invariably, there should be a lot more men in those positions. Normally, I would find that the chief of staff, purely by virtue of the fact that we don't have as many women in the higher ranks, because women are only in our defence force for 30 years. So generally, the gender advisors travelling overseas in those positions will be men at the moment. So that will change, obviously, as more women pass up through the chain of command. But the gender focal points, absolutely, that should be a total mix. And if anything, I would push that it should be a male as opposed to a female, because the last thing we want is females getting pigeonholed and put into certain jobs just purely because of their sex.
Finally, just to return to the numbers question, women make up now around 10% of UN police and 3% of uniformed peacekeepers. A number of people have pointed out that achieving greater gender equality is not just about the numbers. We've talked a lot today, I think, about all of the other factors that are at play. What do you think are the key obstacles that remain to getting those numbers up and increasing the deployment of women in UN peace operations?
First of all, we have to get our numbers up at home, and that's across the board, all the organizations, because I know the UN want greater numbers, and that's perfect. However, we currently, as I said, have 6% of females. We have 4.8% of females serving overseas. If we try and increase that number, the 4.8% of those serving overseas, what's going to happen is we're going to put increased pressure on the women who are serving to go overseas. And I've said this before, if we do that, what we're actually doing is we're not taking into consideration the fact that there are periods in a woman's life where she is not going to be available to go overseas. So we have to factor this in. If a woman is having children, we have to allow for approximately 2 years, 3 years for a pregnancy and a baby before she is then ready to go back overseas again. So what can we do to change this? One is we have to increase the number of women in our defense forces, first of all. But the other thing is, I don't necessarily feel we need to have women just to get a gender perspective across. I mean, it should be men getting the gender perspective into our operations. It's not just women who can do this. It must be done by both men and women if it's going to succeed.
Well, Jane, thank you so much for sharing these perspectives with us today.